Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
And then it's all over!
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll him out, here's some ground and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, and it is a celebration, bitches. Sean Desai is back in the house.
Woo!
All right. We were totally convinced last week that you would actually just quit the show.
No, I can't quit this show, man. There's no way.
Can't quit us?
You can't quit us?
No.
Although Joe's upset he didn't show up today because he got to sit in your seat for a while. So now he's whining.
Doing something?
He said he was golfing. He said he's smashing balls.
That's it. Yeah.
I assume that's just his hobby in the...
Okay.
Spare time anyways.
So we've held down the reins in your absence. Welcome back. Excited to see that Kevin Lee gets on perhaps one of the most insane pay-per-view cards of all time, as this is
the one coming up, you mean?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. The September 27th, right?
September 27th.
Is there a fight going on?
UFC 178. If you were apparently sleeping all week, you might have missed that they thought the UFC thought that, well, we should probably do a press conference like we normally do, and we'll get these guys to go.
Yeah, but Dana's off work. Should we do that, guys? Yeah, Dave Scholler can handle
it. Dave Scholler's got it. He's totally got it.
That's the guy that was in the middle, right?
Yeah.
I thought it was John Anik at first, but it happened so fast. I was like, John needs to learn some.
Yeah, so Dana White is on vacation this week. Dave Scholler's going to handle the face-to-face.
It's just a face-to-face. What can go wrong?
Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier, super heated, but kept it under control, did their thing, and then in comes Jon Jones, Daniel Cormier. Jon touches Cormier. Cormier shoves Jon.
Okay, all right. Let's hold on.
Hang on.
No, you can't just go there and then
sure
say
I can.
Hang
on. I can do whatever.
He comes in with a – it's not a heavy one, but it's a headbutt. He butts him in the head with his head. That's a headbutt, right, Jon?
I
need your expertise on this stare down.
It was a battle ram for sure.
Okay, all right.
Battle ram. So Cormier shoves him, and then they proceed to destroy most of the MGM Grand as if it was a WWE, Survivor Series match.
Where is the cage or the ring? Every time Eric and I are in Vegas, there's a cage or a ring in that
right,
lobby, and this time they don't have
right
one.
Right where that lion is, there's always a cage or a ring, but this one time they just destroy everything. They throw a shoe. Well, Cormier throws a shoe and hits a woman in the head.
Oh, really?
Fan had to actually find Cormier's phone and return it, and then the UFC quickly goes...
Wait, so this wasn't staged?
Right. Here's the funny thing. I will play all of this audio, and then I'm going to tell you something very funny about is it or is it not staged. So first, they separate them, and they immediately go on to SportsCenter, and this happens.
Definitely not proud of what happened today, but what happened was we had a face-off, and in the UFC, it's very common to see two athletes get very close in their face-offs. Our heads touch, our nose rubs together. It's a very intimate, very passionate moment for a lot of fighters. I've actually never had a fighter put his hands on me by squeezing my throat. I reacted in self-defense by beating up Daniel.
Daniel, what's your take?
I have actually never heard a fight get described as intimate and passionate. I have no idea what John Dummy Jones is talking about. First off, you're right. People do get close to each other, but they don't put their head against yours and nudge you forward. In my lifetime, I will never, ever allow a man, I don't care if it's Mike Tyson in his prime, I don't care if it's Vladimir Klitschko, no one will ever nudge me forward with their head and not expect a reaction. I have a son. I will teach my son not to allow anyone to bully him. John Jones will never bully me. John Jones is apologizing. Hey, I'm glad he apologized. I apologize for our actions, but it's so fake. Thanks. John Jones, he's a fake individual. He's a fake person, and I'm going to beat him up on September 27th. What I want to say is this voice that John Jones is talking in, you guys should have heard him 2 minutes ago. I mean, what in the world is this? This guy is such a fake human being. He's a fake individual. I don't care to learn anything about John Jones that I don't know. The whole incident, I don't care about the incident. I care about September 27th, becoming the UFC light heavyweight champion. Whatever. He's weak. He's a punk. He's a liar. He's dishonest. He's a whole bunch of things that he should not be proud of being.
So while that is all going on, Jon Jones goes on Instagram and does one of his patented videos where he says that Daniel Cormier is weak and he felt so weak and he's going to beat him on September 27th.
He's bragging about taking him down.
Taking him down in 6 seconds. And then in vintage Jon Jones deletes it immediately, because that's what Jon Jones does.
He deleted that?
Oh, of course he did, because it's all he ever does is he talks trash about his opponent and then deletes it off Instagram, because that's what he loves to do.
Then it's gone forever.
So then the UFC still has time, because there's no real heat on them right now. The video is going viral. Everyone's starting to play it. It's going all over the place. So they decide, well, let's put these guys on Fox Sports and see what happens. So first, they put them on Fox Sports in two different rooms, because
they don't want to be in the same room.
Don't want to be in the same room. So Jon gets to explain his side of the story at this point to Fox.
Basically what happened was, we were at the press conference earlier. It's Conor McGregor and his opponent. They get in each other's face, pretty close to each other, pretty heated. The atmosphere in the room was just pretty thick. I looked over at Cormier and I could tell by his face that he felt, he was feeling it emotionally. So I knew it was going to be a heated stare down. Right away, me and Daniel, we meet in the middle of the octagon and no one stopped. Usually there's a little distance between fighters. I walked right up on him. He walked right up on me. I put my chin down, and our faces touched at that moment, which happens all the time. I mean, Chris Weidman and Anderson Silva and darn near kissed. You know what I mean? So it happens all the time. I just figured it was going to be a great photo op. It was going to get the fans really excited. I did not expect to get hit in the throat. When I got hit in the throat right away, I reacted off of a sure instinct.
Okay, we'd stop with the hit in the throat.
Getting pulled up.
Just so, stop the clip. Okay, good.
So it goes.
Did he get hit in the throat, Sean? Again, I need expert analysis here. He didn't get hit in the throat. He got shoved.
Yeah, shoved.
He got shoved. Well, so he, between those hours, he had amended his statement. It
was Conor McGregor was all fired up, so that's his fault.
Right. No longer a passionate thing. Daniel Cormier gets to respond, which I will play here in a second. But that story begins to shift a little bit more as Jon Jones goes on Kimmel. You can check that out on Facebook. But Cormier got a chance to respond on Fox, and this is what he had to say.
Well, for me personally, it was kind of surprising, because when Jon initially walked up in the back, we shook hands. I introduced him to Selena. I didn't really know what to expect with going into this deal. But after the interaction in the back, I figured it would be pretty cordial. And then all day, we're doing interviews and we're kind of doing our thing at the opposite end of the MGM Grand. And then when we get up on the stage, he comes up to me and he gets very close and he hits me with his forehead. I've said time and time again, there is not a man walking this earth that will get into my face, put his head on me and push me forward without me actually reacting. Like Jon did, he apologized for our actions. We should never behave in that way. There are a lot of people that look up to us and admire us for what we do in the octagon and outside of the octagon. We've both shown to be smart, professional guys outside of the cage. But with that being said, I can say 100 times, if a person does that to me, I'm going to react in the same exact way.
So at that point, the UFC guys had gotten their moment. They got Jon Jones on Kimmel. The world is talking about it. The video ended up not only on where you would expect, the traditional sports outlets of Fox Sports, obviously, ESPN, Bleacher Report, all of those sorts of universes. It then ends up on the Today Show. It ends up on Good Morning America. And the UFC has what they want. So now it's time for the UFC to go, should probably say this is part of that we're sorry. So they come out and say, this is certainly not a proud moment for the UFC organization. We expect more from our athletes, especially these two gentlemen who are very well-trained, highly educated professionals. Their actions were clearly a violation of the UFC's code of conduct. And then, to show you, if you've listened to the show or been an MMA fan for a long time, you know that we have some issues with the Nevada Athletic Commission in the fact that they need better judging. There's a lot of things that they need better of. And this sentence encapsulates perhaps what is wrong with the Nevada Athletic Commission. The Nevada Athletic Commission has requested a copy of the video incident. Try the internet. What do you mean you've requested a copy?
Okay.
Google it. It's everywhere. What do you mean?
They need a copy, Eric.
For what?
Can you send them to it?
Sean, explain to me why. Do they have jurisdiction over a press conference? What do they have jurisdiction over in this regard?
In a press conference,
they're not in competition, right? They don't have any right to this.
Well, they're licensed, though. I mean, it's the same as the drug tests and things. They're going to have a little bit of control over fighters at that point.
Yeah, there is accountability. But the only thing that the reason why I said I think all this is staged is because you don't hear anything about lawsuits. I mean, basically, when other people do it and it wasn't staged, you're like, well, you know, you'll hear about people doing lawsuits.
Yeah, but
like
I mean, these are two of the prized fighters. These guys are going to sell.
I'm not saying from them, like their agents or managers or whatever, because that kind of shuffle or whatever you want to call it on stage, that was a whole lot more than when Anderson bumped Chael with his shoulder. And
sure,
remember when that happened,
but that's
people
when
were
the,
talking about, oh, that's assault.
That's when the NSAC said that, hey, we're going to start basically handing out punishments if you guys do this in pre-fight activity. So I think that's where their leeway comes in, so to speak, their ability to regulate something like this. I don't know about staged. I think what we normally see in these, okay, you know, John's going to go in with a little bit of a headbutt or a head shove or whatever you want to call the thing. You see Daniel back off and push. That's usually where they stop. John overreacts in this situation. He got shoved off after he, you know, if he wants to shove back, but
well,
he
Cormier's
stepped back.
Shove was a good one.
It was a good shove.
He
but
had
I,
like that roadhouse choke, he, you know, that Patrick Swayze thing. And
he can't walk, man.
Yeah, but
he can't fight.
He got
that's
shoved.
That's why he reacted.
After he got headbutted, everybody's even at that point. Most guys kind of step back. There might be another shove from John, and everybody relaxes. You know, poor Dave Scholler standing there. John Jones goes into a fighting stance and then just charges forward. What do you do at that point? I don't think any of that stage, simply because you're putting two of your fighters at a lot of risk right there, falling off a stage, going into a pile of people. John bragging about this at the end, that tells me he's a little bit scared here. He's worried about something. If you're bragging about a takedown when eight other dudes were laying on another dude, come on, stop.
And so,
and I don't think the Athletic Commission can really do anything in this situation.
I wouldn't be surprised.
There might be a little bit of like slap on the wrist, but as far as fines,
they are going to do
like
nothing
that,
to these guys.
No, they're going to do nothing.
You know, Conor McGregor was like, "Man, I should have done that."
I totally should have punched Dustin Poirier right in the mouth.
If you don't do something and you're going to take that regulation where you can regulate pre-fight activities for your licensed fighters, especially it happened in their state too. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about this one. It's not like they were doing a pre-fight press conference in Chicago for something that happens in Vegas. Floyd Mayweather likes to do that. He goes around the country.
Yeah.
It's not even like this happened outside of their state. It happened in the MGM Grand, a block away from their office, and these guys basically got into a bit of a brawl. If you don't do it here, you can never do it again.
That is true, but I don't think they will do anything. ESPN poll came out and showed that 59.6% of the people think that it's staged.
I still don't think that. I agree with you,
and Ariel Helwani had a great point. He said, I don't think it's staged either. I mean, and I get it. He works for the UFC, so the chances of him revealing behind the curtain slim to none. However, he's got a great point. It was way too public, and way too much could have gone wrong with knocking over the staging and all of that stuff. That said, they sold some pay-per-views.
Well, that's the bottom line.
They sold some pay-per-views.
Give me those Wolf tickets.
When it comes down to it, because when it happened, I was actually down in Dallas, Texas, and I was at a restaurant having some beautiful brisket, by the way. Which I see
you brought back.
Yeah, thanks. I look up at the screen, and I just see this, you know, no volume, right, because I'm at the restaurant. I look up at the screen, or a bar and grill, and I see this nonsense going on. I'm like, well, there goes some ticket sales right there, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't even have to, like, hear or find out what was going on.
Oh, no, it's just up on the screen.
It was on the screen. I see these guys pushing each other, falling off the stage. I'm like, man, they just sold out that arena.
Yeah, as if they weren't going to, which is another reason I don't necessarily think this is staged. It's one thing when you don't believe a guy can beat another guy and you need to sell some tickets. I mean, this was going to sell out anyways.
Yeah.
I think John Jones overreacted. I think John Jones comes off as a bit of a jerk in a lot of these exchanges. You talked about the Jimmy Kimmel clip. He thought a good way to introduce himself to Daniel Cormier is saying, I bet you I could always take you down. You know, and he said, I'm a junior college wrestler, and he's an Olympic wrestler. Oh, I can take you down. John thinks that ingratiates himself to others. John's kind of a jerk. He's come off as a jerk. He puts up the internet videos, then deletes them like a jerk.
Like a jerk would.
And then his apologies sound like a jerk apologizing when his mom told him he had to.
So you're going for Jones in this fight, then?
Yeah, I think Jones in this fight is a guy who's concerned. It's not necessarily that I don't think he'll win, but I think he's concerned. He's fighting a guy that's been fighting it heavy. If DC makes the weight again, he's going to be one of the stronger guys John Jones has ever faced.
No doubt.
And it's going to be a tough fight for him. That's why he's bragging about the takedown. Oh, y'all said I couldn't take him down. Dude, shut up. You're on a stage. You're 4 feet high, and there's 80 people around
you.
It's
a fight, not a takedown contest. Right.
Well, even if he had taken him down, you know, the guy tripped over 10 other people. Yeah. Dave Scholler's hanging on for dear life. I mean, it's just, it's a ridiculous thing to be bragging. And then he's shouting afterwards like he won something. You didn't win anything, man. You're a guy that's been in there.
I didn't see the aftermath. Biggest prize fights on the planet.
Yeah, got up and came to the end of the stage and started screaming.
Barking like a dog or something. Yeah. He
was
like, oh.
I was enjoying my brisket too much. I could care less what was going on in the UFC.
That surprised me the most because this isn't a guy who's new to the game, so to speak. This guy's been in some of the biggest fights on pay-per-view, and he's going to scream and holler after a guy falls down on top of a pile of eight other dudes?
But correct me if I'm wrong.
Well,
I don't know that Jones has faced another undefeated fight. You know, Jones has a mark on his record, but it's a disqualification.
Sure.
So other than that, he's blemishless. Daniel Cormier,
I get that, though, but he's in the middle of the MGM Grand.
No. I'm saying, but I wonder if that's the part that's maybe in his head.
That's what I think is in his head. I think everybody's talking about the wrestling. He talked about it on Kimmel, which means it's probably bothering him. He wanted to brag about that. Now, let's not pretend he wasn't bragging about the way he introduced himself to Daniel Cormier the first time they met backstage. I believe he said it was Brock Kane. He was backstage, and I know you probably missed that clip. He just bragged about, oh, I said I could take him down. He wasn't doing that because he was being self-effacing. He wanted to brag about that encounter and tell him what he did, and that's got to be his biggest, and it should be his biggest worry.
But, like, even when, Cummings, when they used to wrestle him and DC back in the day, DC didn't deny. He's like, yeah, that guy, you know, he got the better of me sometimes, but it's a fight, you know. I don't think DC is concerned. Even if he does get taken down in this fight, I don't think he's concerned about it. He doesn't care. All he wants to do is hurt John Jones, so... Whether it's on the ground.
Does this backfire at all? I mean, I know a fighter's got to be
focused. Mental warfare stuff. I mean, you know, when you got that much on the line, and the only thing I really take in consideration is I just look at DC's opponents and I look at John Jones' opponents. And that's where you can really make, you know, that's where it outweighs some of it. You know, because when you look at DC's guys, like when he was in Strikeforce, nothing. I don't want to say anything bad, but you know, a lot of those guys. Jones did make a good point. They are kind of older. They are a little bit at the end of their career, like Barnett.
But they're heavier and they're bigger and stronger.
Yeah. But with that being said, it wasn't like DC was winning by decisions. I mean, he cleaned out that heavyweight. I mean, he was knocking guys
out.
There
was no question about that.
Oh no, not at all. And you know, his first fight in the UFC was I forgot who he was against, but it went to a decision. Frank Mir, right? Yeah, him and Frank Mir went. And Mir's a tough guy to put away. Most guys don't put him away. And, you know, you had the UFC jitters. I get it, you know. But you can't sit there and say that performance is why he's not going to beat John Jones.
Oh, I mean, and Roy Nelson, that's a real deal fighter. He beat Dan Henderson. He's coming off that win, obviously.
Bigfoot Silva, Josh Barnett.
That Bigfoot fight, looking back, we didn't see it then, but I think that's one of the most impressive wins he's got now.
That was the one where he broke his hand because he punched him so hard. That was like one of the craziest overhand rights I've ever seen.
And even looking back at it now, though, Antonio Silva's coming to his own, really, as a fighter, and you realize, oh, he was really good.
Even after that fight, Silva was still going up the ladder mm-hmm. as far as opponents and stuff. So I think, you know, both guys had their hands full.
There is no doubt, Sean, that Jones' resume is impressive.
Very impressive.
You know, it's unfortunate that he.
He seems insecure about it every time.
He seems like he's, to be honest with you, he seems like he's trying to do a really terrible impersonation of Muhammad Ali and not a very good one. You know,
he tries to use this martial art code warrior thing that he follows, which I don't really buy too much.
Muhammad Ali would have never been on SportsCenter apologizing after something like that happened.
No, he would have been Vitor Belfort. Lions don't apologize, son. Lions don't apologize.
I whooped him on stage.
He would have a little, gorilla in his hand.
I rhymed that for you guys.
He'd be punching the gorilla. He'd be doing whatever. He'd had a doll of Daniel Cormier.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean. It seems like... this is the thing that he wanted to be a heel all his life, so now he's going to be a heel, and he's just not a very good one. And what'll be interesting, or what would have been interesting, Ken, is that if you look at the card at UFC 178, for really big fans of the UFC, there are some amazing fights. If you are a casual Buffalo Wild Wings, I show up because I think fights are going on, this is probably the only one you know, and you might not know Daniel as much as you know John Jones, and it would have been interesting without all of this what that pay-per-view would have done.
Sure.
You think? I think John Jones is that guy now. I think he's that guy in the UFC. Even more so, everybody's going to love watching the heavyweights, but he's even more so, I think, than Cain Velasquez.
You know,
he's
that guy
that's
it's funny.
John Jones, he's the guy. I mean, he would have been on Kimmel anyway this week, with or without. Obviously, we had a lot more to talk about. Look at the UFC. John Jones has got to be the poster boy at this point. If he's... Who else is there?
Ronda is the poster boy.
That's true. Yeah, good point. Good point.
Ronda is the draw.
Okay, well, let's say Ronda's there in the mix, and John Jones got to be right there with her.
And we did talk about that. I just wonder, John Jones versus Daniel Cormier, given all of the weird...
I still think John is more bankable than Ronda, though. Ronda's the big superstar that's lying in wait that could make them a lot of money if she keeps running through things.
Mm.
But again, she hasn't sold a ton on her own. Not like John Jones. And John has had the benefit of guys like Chael Sonnen and Rashad Evans and some of those dudes.
And Ken's right. I think a lot of people that are buying into Jones's fights, they're buying in because they obviously want to see him lose.
Right. You know, it's the Nick Diaz factor.
Yeah,
you want to see him lose.
Well, I think Nick Diaz fans, whether you love him or hate him, you just know you're going to get a good fight out of
him. Yeah, but
Nick
I think
Diaz,
there's always – there's that half of the people that are like –
Well, because he loses, but he still sells tickets.
Yeah,
for sure. It's cool. But,
yeah.
I think Jones had a lot of hate, a lot of fans jumped off his wagon when he had that DUI situation and all that a couple of years ago.
Sure.
And then he pulled out of the fight and had to shut down that whole event. But I think he's got even more uglier fans now because of the way he's reacting, through social media than he did back then. So bottom line, whatever it does to sell tickets,
I just think this was Vince McMahon-esque in its ability to sell pay-per-views, planned or not. This is this is a good thing for the UFC, which is why before we get to segment two, I just don't think that they're going to do anything to him. I think you're going to be disappointed,
yeah.
Ken.
They'll get fine. It's nothing that's going to hurt, but they're going to do something.
Nothing will happen. We'll be back. It's
something.
Way of the Warrior
versus nothing.
Way of the Warrior. Partner, you're dying, bigger they are the... Follow our Twitter account at Wow Show.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric O'Brien, along with Ken Evans and Sean Dazay from Triumph MMA. We were talking about UFC 178. I feel it's fair to continue to mention that Kevin Lee will be on that card fighting John Tuck.
Yes.
A very dangerous John Tuck.
Yes,
your boy is.
Is
not getting any easy trips in the UFC.
No, and it's kind of funny, when you look at it, because a lot of people that when we got the fight offer and once we announced it, a lot of our friends and a lot of our fans were like, so who's John Tuck? And it's like it goes to show you that you have all these dangerous fighters in the UFC that are not famous yet.
Well, it's funny that you say that because when you guys announced it, that's what we said here. Because I was saying, if you had not seen John's last fight, he beat a dude by punching him with his heel in the liver until the guy just did not want to fight anymore. There are so many people at that weight class that are so dangerous that you don't even know who they are. That here, we're fortunate to get this glimpse that I think most people don't get to see is two fighters, depending on who Kevin...
Same record, right? Both 8-1.
Yeah, but two fighters that are coming up, both of them extremely dangerous.
Yeah.
Kevin had a great outing his first bout in the UFC. He didn't come out a victor, but lots of people took notice. His second fight, another really, really tough fight against a really tough opponent.
Yeah.
This one, I think, personally looks like it might be a better fight to spotlight what Kevin is good at. But still a really dangerous fight for both of those guys.
Yeah, whoever ends up losing will definitely be exposed. That's for sure. But just goes to show you the matchmaking in the UFC. These guys, they really know how to evaluate and look at the fighters and say, you know what, this will be a good fight for that person.
But what's exciting about that, Sean, is the fact that we complain a lot about what these next couple of years from the UFC look like when the upper tier of this organization seems to have a few cracks in it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like things just aren't panning out the way they need to, and we get glimmers of hope like Anderson Silva and Nick Diaz, and then things kind of fall, other things fall apart.
But that is happening.
That is happening.
Yeah,
but
cool.
What I'm saying is other things happen,
right.
And you don't get Sean Dazay versus Ken Evans, or whatever you've been waiting for.
Oh, that would sell so many wolf tickets.
Lots of wolf tickets. But it's fun to see that there's all the stuff going on essentially kind of on the underground part of the UFC where these guys could be big by the end of the year.
And what's cool is with being on Way of the Warriors, we get that firsthand taste of all of it,
uh-huh.
Especially having a resident guy from, our neighborhood going in there. It's really, really cool. It's really exciting, especially right after we did our win against Jesse Ronson. We were backstage, and Kevin was in great shape. He didn't get hurt. He was injured free. I mean, obviously he wanted some downtime, maybe about four or five weeks. So, cutting the weight,
sure,
all that stuff. But I mean, he told us and the manager right away, he's like, guys, late September, early October, man, get me back in there. And
but
a week and a half later, here we go.
But what people don't realize is at this stage of the game, there's really not much money in it, so you've got to be as busy as you possibly can. You know, for two reasons. One, you want to be on the map so that Joe Silva calls you.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is you want money to keep coming in so you can get better camps and do bigger things.
Well, that
and
too.
And endorsements and sponsorships. And
you know, then the good thing about our guy Kevin is that I don't want to say anything bad about, you know, the Fox shows and stuff like that, but we're getting on some decent cards. I mean,
yeah.
Super Bowl weekend.
Yep.
The 4th of July weekend card, you know, the tough finale.
These are the cards a lot of guys.
Pay-per-view card coming up.
Try to negotiate for.
Yeah. I mean, hands down, our manager is awesome. He does a great job, you know. So he's got really good relationships with the UFC's upper staff. So, you know, when you have the right people in place working for you, it makes the job a whole lot easier, that's for sure.
Certainly does. And some strange news coming out of Ariel Helwani had a chance, and I don't do this because you're back, but just because in the news it happened. Did a couple hours with Paul Heyman, who worked for ECW, owned ECW, went to WWE, has managed Brock Lesnar in his career twice in the WWE.
Oh, we got Brock news this week. Good.
Well, I thought this was...
You're saving 3 months. I've been gone for 3 months.
Yep.
You're like, okay.
It did actually happen this week.
It did happen this week, though.
Really?
But they did a two-hour talk. And what I thought was interesting is some of the things that Paul said were fascinating. Things like the fact that we were really, really close to Brock Fedor. That was much closer than I think most people
they
realized.
They had
really
booked
close.
Both of them until Fedor's dad passed.
Yes.
Yeah, it was all good to go.
We were all good to go on that. And that this really interesting news coming out that for the first time, literally for the first time ever, Brock is 100% at 37 years old. Not that he should come back and compete, but Paul certainly said it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility. But even you, who's not a huge fan, has to admit the stuff that guy's been able to do over 37 years, if he wasn't even close to 100%, is nothing short of miraculous.
It was very short.
Well, basically and again, there's going to be a little bit of hyperbole with a guy who's working in the WWE and with Brock Lesnar right now. But the basic gist of it is the fact that his diverticulitis was so bad and he was fighting that for so long that he didn't realize his body, even with the amazing things he was doing, was fighting that disease the entire time. And even when he fought Alistair Overeem, he probably wasn't 100%. And you've got to be 100% against a guy like Alistair.
Who was 1,000%.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, exactly.
He was plus 100, if you know
to
what
be
I'm
fair,
saying.
Paul didn't even go there, honestly, in the interview. But yes, you've got to be 100%. It was one of those things where Brock was not there, and he didn't want to do that part of it anymore. Another interesting thing is apparently Brock won't watch any fights. Because he gets upset.
Sure.
He goes, I could kick that guy's blank.
That's funny. Very
yeah,
funny.
Yeah, dude, listen, you know, that the only factor, honestly, all jokes aside, is Brock's age. And going through that disease and being recovered and being 100%, to bounce back at that age, I mean, we're not in the Randy Couture days
anymore, we're not, but you would have to, you obviously work with the UFC more intimately than we do. We just deal with them on the press level, right? But even you know that if they're serious about doing Gina Carano and Ronda Rousey, which they are, they know they could make money off of a single Brock Lesnar fight, whatever
yes,
that is.
Yes.
Brock Lesnar and Mark Hunt, whatever that ends up
even
being.
Even if they decide to hold that show in the middle of Alabama, it will
make money. So if he wants to, even you might be 1,000% correct. The chances of you bouncing back and getting in competitive shape for the UFC versus WWE shape are two clearly different things. You know that that's a single bankable fight, regardless of outcome.
It is, you know, and again, what Brock did with having just what I think two or three fights going in the UFC and getting the belt, I think that's historical. That's UFC, you know.
Well, the interesting thing about
records, right there.
Oh yeah,
obviously.
For sure.
So,
I mean, nobody expected. I mean, the guy did not have an easy road at all. I mean,
when he fought Randy Couture for the belt, I mean, it was clear and obvious he was just going to smash Randy Couture. I didn't think Randy had a chance.
You didn't think so?
No.
I think that's when size does matter. Regardless of whether he had a chance or not, he was able to go in and he got to beat the champion. He got that Frank Mir fight where he had his revenge fight. Oh, that was ugly. You know,
like that was his real, to me, that was his real, okay.
Well, and Paul,
he proved himself.
Paul Heyman said he was about as sick as he'd been in that Shane Carwin fight. And obviously he didn't look great in that fight, was able to still win. You talk about bankable. I mean, you can put him in there with anybody.
Yeah, anybody.
Is he going to? Well, Kevin Lee will probably end up on the card, too.
Right, yeah. Kevin Lee will talk his way
into it.
UFC 200, Brock Lesnar Kevin Lee.
I mean, I don't want to go too far off subject here, but they were talking about doing a super heavyweight division.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I could see Brock maybe dominating that.
Yeah, certainly. Sure. I think the problem with that is we have enough of an issue at the heavyweight division, getting it to have any traction when the champ has been out for so long.
Yeah.
There was news out this week that Mark Hunt thought he was fired, and Dana White, who clearly has the worst vacation ever this week, has to take care of all this. Like, calm down, John Jones and Cormier. Get back on Twitter. Tell, Mark Hunt he has a job.
If I was Dana, I'd go to the nearest bar and the bartender and be like, listen, every time I hear some negative press, I want 5 shots lined up. I'm on vacation.
And that bar owner's retiring tonight.
And that one would retire. So that was breaking. Wanderlei Silva, it looks like there are going to be some sort of fines or something levied against him for that failed test. That said, he still lives in this universe that doesn't have any logic to it, and he would like to fight.
I told you. Who told you he was going to try to fight again?
He would like to fight Chael Sonnen. He would like to fight Vitor Belfort, or he would like to get a trilogy fight with Dan Henderson.
The good news for him is, as space exploration continues, we might eventually have a place that will license Wanderlei Silva. Is he getting any of these fights anywhere?
There's no way, dude. No way. I mean, you said in segment one that if they don't do something to Cormier and Jones, they never can, right? They dropped the hammer on Chael Sonnen. There was a moment, and even as I'm talking right now, there still may be a moment where Chael gets fined a ridiculous amount of money for fighting this weekend in Metamoris, right? So they dropped the hammer on Chael. They can't just not do anything to the guy that not only failed the test, but ran away from said test. That has to be, in my mind, that has to be as guilty as failing.
Well, basically,
and
it's like the NFL. If you have a masking agent, you're guilty because they don't want people doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, I think, if you don't test, you got to be guilty, right, Sean?
The athletic commission respected. Well, when Chael was up there, he was up front. He didn't hide anything. He was like, "Yeah, I'm here. Give me my punishment. I'm guilty." And when you get a guy like Wanderlei who's trying to act like he's innocent, Come on, really? Get out of here.
So
just keep running.
I don't know that anything will happen about that, but that is what Wanderlei is doing this week, I think, to take the attention off the fact that chances of him getting fined are pretty severe. And since you haven't been here in 3 months, I figured it would be a perfect time to do this.
This week in George St. Pierre.
I'm not impressed by your performance.
Hey, I'm afraid of you, man. Are you crazy in the head now?
Let me tell you something, uneducated fool.
This week in George St. Pierre.
And this week in George St. Pierre, David Luazo was doing some interviews and talking about how he is making the jump from middleweight down to welterweight because he feels that's a better weight for him at his age, which I think is an interesting juxtaposition because most fighters, as they get older, they want to go up in weight, but he feels that 170 might be a good fit for him. He's had some difficulty at 85 and had to take some higher weight stuff because people don't want to fight him, because Sean, you and I being, and Ken obviously being longtime MMA fans, Luazo is a tough test no matter what age he is, and lots of people don't want to take that, especially when you really don't have the opportunity to lose and get in the UFC, right? And you don't want to lose to David Luazo, so he needs to find fights wherever he's going. That's not the story. The story is, he still trains with George, and he still feels that George has the fire, and at some point, he's fairly confident that this is going to turn around and George is going to come back. And I don't know if that's going to be after this Anderson-Nick fight.
Right.
You know, is that what – is Nick's second fight going to be Nick GSP again? I don't know.
Right. Yeah, I don't know either. Luazo, I got a chance to see him on the Tough finale, and – He didn't look like an 85er. He looked like a guy who could make welterweight.
When I saw him,
I was like, man, he should be a whole lot bigger. I always thought he was like a 200-pound guy going down to 85,
right.
But he looked like he was at walking weight or something. So
that might be happening.
Yeah, maybe. You know. And the thing about Luazo, a lot of people don't understand. Luazo, the reason why he had that little where he fell off the map literally is because he had such a hard time finding fights because no one wanted to get cut up by his elbows.
Uh-huh.
You know, he had some of the most dangerous, wicked elbows that were just like, people would literally be like, nope, don't want to fight that guy. So, and then whenever he did get a fight, he would get kind of lost in his own. So he was losing the mental battle of the fight. And then eventually, you know, after so many losses, you get cut.
And if you have not taken a moment to watch The Striking Truth,
yeah,
it's probably the best documentary to kind of show that, because it's this really interesting juxtaposition of David Luazo at the top of his game in the UFC coming downward, and GSP at the bottom of the game coming upward, and where they meet in the middle because they're dear friends and have been training partners for a long, long time. It's a fantastic documentary if you haven't seen that.
You know, a lot of the people out there who are competing, whether it's MMA or jiu-jitsu, boxing, anything, a lot of this, you know, go see a sports psychologist, you know, because that's, to me.
Do you guys have one on camp for?
When, you know, we have access, of course, you know, but I think when there's more on the line, that's when you kind of need to talk it out more.
I wasn't trying to expose it. I was wondering if, like, if more people are doing that right from the get-go.
I don't think,
like,
they are. I that's what I'm saying. I think more people should do it, you know. Whether you're in some kind of sport, anything that's competition, whether it's your job, you know, you're going for a certain, let's say you're a sales guy or something, you're trying to meet your quota, whatever. I think, you know, but, like, obviously with this sport psychologist, psychology is, I think it's so important because you got to know how to, like, handle it. Because when you lose because you didn't let it all out, whatever, you're beating yourself up more inside, and then you go home, you don't want to watch a fight like Brock, you know.
Right.
You know, I think guys like that, you know, they need that kind of edge.
And then, well, before we take a break, probably the worst story of the week, I could say by far, WCW and UFC fighter Josh Grispy is in jail for what the police in his city called the worst case of domestic abuse ever. What happened? Well, Josh Grispy trained his pit bull to attack his wife.
Oh, Jesus.
And mauled her and put her in the hospital. So Josh has been charged with 2 counts of assault and battery with a dangerous weapon, storage of a large capacity firearm or rifle or shotgun near a child. Now, she has been released from the hospital and reunited with her children, but he is sitting in jail and hopefully will sit there for a long time.
I mean, he looks like a nice guy.
Well, what's interesting is, I think, and we started to talk about this, I think, a couple of years ago when people started to ask the question about brain trauma in fighters, and it'll be interesting to see these cases of these guys that maybe do too much for too long,
for too little,
right. And what happens to them in those cases. And I don't want to put any guesses on what Josh's mental capacity was to do something like this, but I think there will be eventually a tie-in between guys who do way too much for way too little and what it does to their brain and how that kind of rolls out.
Yeah, I think you want to look at this. You don't want to make excuses or start giving a reason that this is okay, but you certainly don't want to ignore the fact that he was a fighter. And a fighter, I don't want to say at a low level because obviously he made it to UFC, but a fighter who probably just had to make his living, do a lot of those weekend fights. And having a lot of fights that maybe paid him a couple $100 a night if he was lucky. So you don't want to make excuses for the guy, but you do want to in a situation like this, and especially from our angle on this type of subject, is look at what he did and maybe why he did it. He could just be a screw-up, just a bad apple. Like, there's a lot of bad apples in a lot of different professions. But let's be real about the situation and know, hey, the guy probably got punched in the head a lot, and if this is doing something to fighters, especially fighters at that level, because this isn't a huge star that was headlining pay-per-views. Fighters at that level that have done a lot of fights, probably a lot of fights he's never even talked about, or a lot of fights we'll never even know about, to make a couple $100 here and there, I think you got to look at the situation.
Well, and you even go up a level, Ken, to Thiago Silva. I mean, that was a terrible case, right? And we're rewarding that guy. He's fighting again at the end of the month. Not in the UFC, but he's got to fight.
Yeah, well,
and
some guys are always going to hire guys too.
Yeah.
But that's the stuff, you know. When you start talk about the reasons that this sport can't be as big as the NFL, aside from the scale, this is why. You know, you can't have guys that do stuff like this, like Josh Grispy.
Yeah, I don't know though. You've got Ray Rice, his unconscious fiance. He's dragging her out of an elevator. I don't agree with that. I think this doesn't damage UFC. Of course, the problem is you're going to have UFC fighter convicted of domestic abuse when this goes along. But, I mean, that's no different than any other sport. There's bad apples everywhere. I don't think – do you think that we're at that point where this kind of – I don't think this kind of thing is still hindering MMA, so
to speak. No. I what I'm saying is the sport itself is hindering itself. You know, if you want this sport to grow in a healthy and manageable way that it gets to whatever the – platform that it's going to get to and kind of peak out, you can't have sideshow BS promotions that are like, oh, that guy who tried to murder people in a jiu-jitsu dojo, yeah, let's totally put him on the main event. Oh, the guy who tried to kill his wife with a dog, yep, let's book him. That sounds like an awesome idea.
So he should have got 2 games.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Sorry.
I'm not the NFL.
I'm just saying.
I'm not doing an NFL show.
I'm just saying.
We could do an NFL show.
No, you're comparing.
Not very many people would like the NFL show.
The NFL every single day does that with a lot of their players. So we've got to.
But the difference is that we as a society think that that's fine.
Oh, I don't think anybody thinks it's fine on either level. Most people don't think it's fine on either level.
How many people have stopped watching the NFL because of all of that stuff?
We'll know in September. Okay. Nobody has. No, right. You're right.
Nobody
you're right.
has.
You're 100% right, but nobody's going to stop watching UFC because of this guy.
Nobody's, and I'm not saying it's a reflection of the UFC. I want to make that very clear. I just think all of the things that you can paint the MMA brush on, these are the things that I think need to be looked at with some sort of focus.
Well, and I would say you look at it with some focus, but I really want to believe that the medical aspect's going to be looked at with some of these guys.
And I
hope somebody does that. I hope, because it's easy to go, this guy's a piece of trash, look what he did to his wife, throw him away forever. That's easy.
Yep.
That's easy. The hard thing to do is sometimes go, why did this guy do this? He looks like a nice guy, like Sean said. Yeah. Maybe he was a nice guy. Maybe we need doctors to take a look at him. Maybe he's never going to recover from this, but we need to kind of know what's going on there. And is there a way to do that? And can we pay attention as a sport? That's what I would like to see UFC do.
I mean, even if you were to find some kind of medical connection there, let's say he was bipolar, then you can go back and be like, well, then why did the doctor
even sanctioned him here?
Yeah, why did they give him a license?
Well, yeah, and you know, we've got a second here or more left, but you can even see traces of that, although nothing to this level at all, but you can see traces of that in the differences between, look at like a Wanderlei Silva.
Yeah.
He's a much different dude.
Oh, yeah.
Not really stable dude that he was, you know, even in his Pride days, because my guess would be there's stuff going on, but we'll have to wait and see what happens there. All right, when we come back, whatever the breaking news is, we will get to it next. It is Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show.
Way of the Warrior.
Now tuned into the greatest.
Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric O'Brien, Ken Evans, Sean Dizay wrapping up the show with whatever news is left to cover. And there's a couple things to talk about. Gunnar Nelson and Rick Story, that has been set October 4th in Sweden. That will be the main event. So you will not know if Gunnar is excited or not, since he only looks to have one sort of emotional face that you will see out of Gunnar Nelson. He is very determined and very stoic in both his fighting and outside of the ring and when he's sleeping and when he's awake. But he will headline October 4th versus Rick Story. In other news, Mark Bocek, Canadian lightweight, has announced he is going to retire because he's, quote, not interested in competing against fighters on PEDs. So it has gotten to the point where we now have talented fighters who are going, look, I've been playing by the rules, and most people aren't playing by the rules, so I am going to walk away from this sport forever. I don't really care what the price is. I will go do something else. At only 32 years of age, a couple great years still left in Mark Bocek. Maybe he will come back at some point, but at this point, walking away and not interested in competing against fighters who are not playing by the rules. And in a very odd turn of events this week, Ben Saunders is back in the UFC and gets the blessing from Titan FC in order to do that. So if you're one of the people who's been excited to see Ben Saunders put some things together and get back in the UFC, that is a done deal. So look for him to get in the octagon here very soon. And we talked a little bit earlier about Ronda Rousey and how she has run through pretty much the best of the best. And she is doing everything she possibly can to, as I said earlier, be the face of the UFC and say things like Carano would be her toughest fight to date, which I think all of us who are on the show and certainly a lot of you who listen know that probably Cyborg would be her toughest fight to date, but this would be the biggest fight to date. And we go back to what we were talking in the segment before of Brock Lesnar being a money fight. This is a money fight. Make no bones about it. I do not think, however, that Gina Carano is Ronda Rousey's toughest test. Metamorphosis 4 is this weekend. Make sure you check that out because those guys are doing some amazing work here. Chael Sonnen is fighting and the lineup just looks amazing. If you like jiu-jitsu, it'll be an amazing thing to check out, and there's not a lot of other stuff going on. So if you're looking for some MMA this weekend or any sort of combat sports, that is what I would check out. And one last note, speaking of combat sports, Josh Koscheck has been announced he will be an analyst for Fox Sports. If you wonder what he's been doing lately, apparently it's been brushing up his broadcasting chops as he will take to a chair at Fox Sports. More details for that. You heard it on Fox on UFC Tonight this week. It was announced that he will make that jump. You need anything all weekend long, you know where to find us. Twitter or Facebook, search WOW Show. It is Way of the Warrior. We will see you next week where we get back to events. There are things happening next week that aren't fights in hotel lobbies. We will talk next. It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
Way of the Warrior.